Good afternoon, and welcome to SEI's podcast series, ETF Revolution, a podcast focused on all things ETFs. I'm Bill Arnold, Regional ETF Director here with SEI. Joining me today is our featured guest, Nicole Hunter, who works for Dimensional Fund Advisors as the head of ETF Capital Markets. Nicole has worked in the ETF industry for over 15 years and was instrumental in helping DFA bring ETFs to the marketplace. Nicole, welcome to SEI's podcast series, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me, and I'm also a big fan of the ETFs, as you know. I think it's been a little longer than 15 years, but who's counting?
You started very young.
12. I think I was 12.
All right. So again, we really appreciate your time. We've been talking to a number of clients and prospects that are thinking of launching ETFs from existing structures like mutual funds. And we wanted to ask you, since your firm was one of the biggest firms that have done the conversion from mutual funds to ETFs, what are some of those challenges and benefits that you see of launching an ETF by converting from a mutual fund to an ETF?
It was definitely something to remember. It's one of those highlights of a career that you never forget. Here at Dimensional, as you suggested, we converted 7 mutual funds into ETFs back in 2021 and 2022, about $40 billion in assets. It was quite the feat. I would say that there's a number of things for those that are considering the space that you should really think about. In my mind, there's really 3 main categories of things. Clients being one, cost and taxes. You know, our motivation here at Dimensional, as it is with everything, is clients first, cornerstone of our business. And so when we're thinking about converting and we're thinking about the challenges and the benefits, we spend a lot of time with our clients and talking to them about the value proposition of the conversion. And now these 7 funds were all tax managed, and all of these clients that, you know, were eager to have the most tax efficient vehicle. And we all know ETFs through their structure can be very tax efficient. So it seems like an obvious fit, but we didn't stop there. This is one of those challenges, right? Not every client can hold securities. Not every client has a brokerage account, for example. And so when you're thinking about the conversion, it's one thing to say, yep, this is the right tax efficiency solution for my clients. It's quite another to say they can actually hold a security. We did a lot of homework on that. For us, obviously, it worked. Our clients, it was a fit. They can hold securities. But if the funds you're looking at, say, have a split, some that can and some that cannot, what are you going to do? Is a big challenge that you need to really think through how you're going to handle. And that was part of the learning curve.
So you're referring to maybe clients that might hold it direct as a fund, but then clients that are in 401k plans or something like that, that it might be more of a challenge for.
That's right. The retirement segment as a category is something to pay a lot of attention to, for sure.
And you mentioned costs and taxes are also a big component of the decision to do it. Can you just talk a little bit about that as well?
Absolutely. So thinking about cost. So, now here we've gone with our clients. We've gone through the exercise that this is the right fit for them and they can hold the security. The next thing is, is what is it going to cost to do it? Conversions aren't free. And, there's some obvious things like the legal fees and the people and the resources you have to deploy. You need to factor all that in. The last thing you want to have happen is to convert and the cost of the conversion outweigh the benefit of the new structure. We looked at it not only from like, do we need a shareholder vote? What's the outside counsel cost going to be? All these things. But in addition, what about the actual operations of the conversion itself, the securities and the portfolios? Ours were all equities. And really going with a fine tooth comb through the understanding anything that might trigger a cost and understanding that well before we decided to actually convert. So costs, soup to nuts, all of the different elements are very important when considering conversion.
That's great information. And obviously ETFs, taxes just in general tend to be better for ETFs. And so obviously that was probably a big component of this. You mentioned in your products, they were tax advantage products, but even if it was a regular product, can you just talk a little bit about the tax side of it as well for Dimensional?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, here we'd identified our tax managed solutions as the right fit. So you can imagine if it was a taxable event, that wouldn't be great. It wouldn't be a great outcome. So we were spending some time with our tax teams, outside tax counsel, and really making sure that it was not, the conversion in and of itself didn't result in a taxable event. Last thing I want is someone to have to, have an established cost basis that they have to and all of a sudden pay these gains on. That would not be a great outcome. So really, thinking through that was key for us in our decision to do the conversion. And happy day, right? It was not a taxable event, and it was a great outcome for our clients. So when I think about challenges, is it right for the clients? What's it going to cost? And is there a tax implication? Are main components that we thought about, but there were some benefits too. You'd ask me, and so. Obviously, we talked about the benefit for the clients. They wanted it, and it was a more tax-efficient structure. But also, for an issuer, there's some benefits as well here. For thinking about distribution of the product, we all know that there's some industry standards. In order to have some distribution, you need to have a track record, 3 years, for example, or certain AUM thresholds. We had a very robust track record with B7 and very healthy asset bases. While that was not the main reason we converted, it was definitely the clients driving it. There were some benefits, to the issuer as well.
That's some great information for folks that are thinking about launching ETFs. And kind of as a good segue into that, a lot of the firms that we're talking to are just thinking about it. They're processing or doing their due diligence on whether they want to launch an ETF or not. So I would ask you, what are some of the main challenges for providers when they are thinking of launching ETFs for the first time? Having a capital markets background, I know the ecosystem is a big part of it, and I hear people talk about the ETF ecosystem. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on launching for the first time and the challenges that come with that.
Sure. It's funny. In my years doing this ETF thing, I've had the privilege to work at very large ETF issuers, some smaller ones, and now, I'm happy here with Dimensional building this amazing top 10 issuer status. I think that the learning curve is the thing that I see most new entrants struggle with. There might be some assumption that if you have a large asset management business that you've got the infrastructure, but to your point, Bill, the ecosystem is something that can be highly underestimated. And to make this real, like to put your hands around it, it's something as simple of like thinking about the inflows and outflows, right? In a mutual fund, cash in, cash out. It's a well-oiled machine at most firms that have asset management businesses. They know the timing. They have all the infrastructure and it's seamless. When those firms start to think about the ETF nature of inflows and outflows, it's very different, right? It's securities in and out, equities or bonds. It's a different, you're no longer dealing with clients coming in and out directly. You're dealing with broker dealers who are authorized and they need to know what the rules are for inflows and outflows before the markets open. So that timing element of when things need to be done in this asset manager is oftentimes very underestimated. And it's like, okay, what are the systems and the people and the risk management that I need to put in place to actually deliver things in a new timeline that I never considered before? Can my company even do that? Is an example of that learning curve that I've seen over and over again for new entrants struggle with, for sure.
Yeah, and I think when we were discussing this earlier, we were mentioning that education is a big component. Mutual funds have been around for a long time. ETFs, even though they've been around for 30 years, I think we're still relatively new in the space, and it definitely is an educational component, a big educational component. So, as we talk to new prospects, as they're thinking about maybe working with SEI, we always talk to them about, hey, do your due diligence now. Figure out and start to understand the ecosystem and the timing of things so that when you do make the decision that you're at least familiar with what's going to come about as you think about launching an ETF.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that bring your experts in as early as possible, your subject matter experts. And some of the resources that I found particularly valuable, so if you're not doing this, please do, is that listing exchanges are a wealth of knowledge. A lot of them industry veterans, the relationship managers there at all three listing exchanges. Those firms that you're talking to for ETF servicing are going to help you think through some of those timing, some of those processes, some of that new infrastructure that might need to be built out, or at least help you evaluate what solutions are, you know, available in the market. You know, it doesn't hurt to have a capital markets person. I'm a little biased, you know, and get the dealer feedback, those authorized dealers. And all of this, of course, alongside engaging your outside counsel, the sooner that you can bring in the experts, I think the better outcome that you're going to have in bringing your ETFs to market.
So DFA has been extremely successful in converting mutual funds to ETFs. What would you say are the main reasons that have contributed to that success?
You've heard me say it, like, our clients are the cornerstone. And it's true. They really did drive the decision. There was a strong demand for the U.S. market for us to have an ETF structure for our investment solutions. We do everything in partnership with our clients. So that's true in our mutual funds, our SMAs, and our other business lines. And so they were helping us decide to enter this space, helping us define the opportunity set and what solutions they wanted to see in the structure. And adding to that, of course, a lot of them were tax sensitive and they really wanted the structure, but in addition to maybe say running an all ETF account solution that many are doing. For us, that was the key. And then in order to do it and do it well, we needed the regulation to change, right? Like the ETF rule in 2019, and, you know, we really couldn't bring the full value of Dimensional, you know, our systematic, flexible approach, that best of active and passive, the cornerstone our clients expect. We couldn't do it before the regulation changed. So as soon as that, you know, that regulation went through, we were very quick to bring product, you know, standalone product to market. And then, of course, you saw us do our conversion. And then, you know, like I said, we've got 30 ETFs now. We've been very busy over the last year and a half years. But, you know, so for us, it was, you know, clients, regulation change. And then honestly, I can't say enough about the infrastructure. So, you know, with the way Dimensional has built investment solutions over the years, we're constantly investing in our systems to make sure we can deliver that systematic, flexible trading approach and managing risk, all the elements that you would expect from our firm. So for us to layer our ETF business onto that constantly invested in infrastructure was really compelling, and allows us to scale and allows us to compete again as a top tier issuer.
I like what you say about you. It always goes back to the clients, right? That's extremely important. And let's be honest, clients are telling asset managers what they want. So Nicole, as we close out this podcast here, just wanted to see if there's one piece of advice that you would give to a new entrant that's coming to the market. What should they really think about, or what's the most important thing that you can think of for a new ETF provider?
Well, yeah, thanks, Bill. So when you think about ETFs, you want them to work in the best of times and the worst of times. And your markets have been really volatile lately. So having that infrastructure sound is important. That goes back to that education comment that you made earlier. When you think about, well, how do they actually work from an issuer's perspective? What if you're not getting cash in and out like you do mutual funds, but you're doing a portfolio of securities or baskets. We like to see a lot of jargon here in the ETF industry. Like, how does it all work and what's the timing? I can't stress enough to do that education as soon as possible. And, you know, bringing in an industry expert, hiring a capital markets person is going to help you achieve that and make sure you have that stability for your infrastructure so that your ETFs perform as expected in all market environments. So the last piece of advice is start early. And really focus on that, you know, that education piece of how ETFs work.
Nicole, thanks so much for sharing your perspective and insights. We really appreciate your time and expertise. For those listening, if you have any questions, please direct them to me. My contact details are included on the invitation to this episode. Stay tuned for upcoming episodes in our series. Thanks for tuning in.